very good Tuesday. Welcome to today's edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to feature agricultural news reports, I'll bring you a look at national and regional agricultural news headlines, and I'll start with regional ag news right after this.
We're waking up to a new dawn in agriculture, a better way, where farmers stop working the soil and start working with it. At Huma, our carbon-rich, humate-based products improve soil health and fertility, deliver nutrients more efficiently, and reduce crop input costs. Welcome to Humix Solutions with a human touch. Visit huma.us to learn more.
California's rainy weather was great for the snowpack in the mountains and water runoff in the spring and summer. However, the colder weather pushed harvest of stone fruit back by about 2 weeks, and production is expected to be down 30%. Rain during blossom was not ideal for pollination and caused a decrease in volume, that according to Magnus Olson with Olson Family Farms. The company grows 26 different varieties of organic stone fruit, including peaches, nectarines, apricots, and plums, and most varieties have seen production come down by almost a third this season. While volume is down, Olson is very happy with the quality of the fruit. In May and June, the weather was perfect. A combination of reasonable daytime temperatures and cool evenings made the fruit thrive. Often it becomes too hot too early, but not this year, he says. As a result of the perfect conditions, the fruit has grown bigger in size and is also more uniform. The rains came early enough in the system that they didn't hinder the fruit. In fact, the wet weather has improved the quality, he added. Because stone fruit was available in stores about 2 weeks later, people were anxiously waiting and demand has been strong. As a result, pricing is up and the higher pricing has been holding stronger than it has in the past. The first week of July, a box of peaches ran between $28 and $33, while the same time last year, a box ran between $22 and $27. The higher prices help with offsetting increased labor costs and other cost increases. While demand is very strong, Olson Family Farms is still able to fulfill everyone's needs. Record rain and snowfall from winter storms have been a blessing, and the snow up in the mountains is really critical, according to Olson. As a result, they are able to use surface water this year instead of having to pump groundwater. During years of drought, Olson's farm sometimes had zero water allocation and relied on groundwater for irrigation the entire season. Last year, surface water lasted for 4 weeks, but 2023 should see a full season of surface water. He says he can't remember the last time that surface water got them through an entire season, but it was probably in the early 2000s. The Olson family immigrated from Sweden in 1889 and came to California's Central Valley. They started in the dried fruit business and transferred into fresh stone fruit. The company is an early adopter of organic farming, as for many years, their entire stone fruit crop has been organically grown. The company is still a family-owned business and in its fifth generation. Cal Poly San Luis Obispo Strawberry Center and USDA Agricultural Research Center have recently received a federal grant to focus on tools to help automate strawberry farming in California. The Strawberry Center's goal is to use research and education to increase the sustainability of California's strawberry industry. Center Director Gerald Holmes stated that strawberry farmers don't have enough workers during the summer to keep up with the crops, so automation would be a big help. That's why things are so urgent a lot of times in agriculture, because you have a perishable commodity. If you don't pick them at the optimum timing, they're either too ripe or not ripe enough. So you got to be there just in time, he says. Holmes also said the production of strawberries is a $3 billion industry, and about 90% of the nation's strawberries come from the Central Coast. This, he added, is why caring for and learning more about the crop is so important. St. Patrick's Day drove higher avocado volumes as shown by the recently released Holiday Retail Recap Report from the Haas Avocado Board. The report details the retail dollar sales, volume, and average price for Haas avocados during the big game, Valentine's Day, and St. Patrick's Day holiday weeks. The Retail Recap reported sales volume and retail sales dollars. The Retail Recap reported sales volume and retail dollar sales reaching 51.9 million units and $52.2 million during a dual holiday week of the big game and Valentine's Day, and 45.1 million units and $45.4 million during St. Patrick's Day. Avocado volume during St. Patrick's Day grew by 20% versus a prior year, adding 7.4 million units to the category during the holiday week. To equip the entire industry for success, HAB produces quarterly reports about national holiday retail sales performance. The Avocado Holiday Retail Recaps provide insightful retail sales information for category managers, marketers, retailers, and industry leaders as they plan their marketing strategy for the upcoming calendar year. The information offers a brief snapshot of each holiday sales, volume, and average sales information. For more information on the holiday sales report, log on to HaasAvocadoBoard.com. Pacific Coast Trading Company's new plot of organic onions in Baja California bridges the growing season gap, allowing the company to offer organic onions year-round. The more than 400-acre piece of land located on the central Pacific coast of the Baja Peninsula of Mexico sprouted after 10 years of work by father and son team Elias and Gabrielle Berry. Elias is credited as the founder and developer of this growing region, which now holds more than 5,000 acres of fertile agricultural land. Enrique Rubio serves as the operations CEO. While Brussels sprouts, strawberries, and other crops grow prolifically in this valley, onions are the focus of this partnership with Pacific Coast Trading Company. Pacific Coast Trading Company was initially established as a subsidiary of Pacific Coast Fruit Company. Pacific Coast Fruit began in 1977 and grew into one of the largest independent conventional and organic produce distributors in the Pacific Northwest. The Pacific Coast Trading Company subsidiary spun off of Pacific Coast Fruit in the spring of 2022 in order to invest in specialized employees and strategically placed warehouses to increase its buying power and to help distribute a vast variety of produce from both large and small growers, according to a company press release. Brad Sumner is a category sales manager for conventional and organic onions at Pacific Coast Trading Company. Sumner has added the assortment of red, yellow, and white organic onions from Mexico to his portfolio of onion suppliers in Washington, Idaho, and the Antelope Valley of California, with whom he has partnered for decades. After 30 years in the onion industry, this new plot in Mexico represents the final piece in a year-round plan to supply customers with high-quality onions. Both unpredictable weather patterns and supply chain interruptions prompted Pacific Coast Trading to shift to a model with more opportunity to influence strategy, marketing, and overall direction, according to Sumner. In order to make sure their customers get consistent flow of supply, they knew they needed to build a relationship more to the actual grower who is growing things for them, he said. It is the first significant onion growing field they have put together, and they're developing direct relationships with growers who have product in the dirt. Getting to the dirt is really important, he said. This program allows him to fill his supply chain and get teammates more onions consistently. The project began with an idea proposed at a trade show in the summer of 2022, only a few months into Pacific Coast Trading Company's independent existence. The idea paired a proven distribution company with a prolific agriculture operation in Mexico interested in growing organic onions for the first time. Sumner credits the Berry family with their vision for Baja onion and for scouting the temperature coastal mesa of El Rosario, where the plot is now planted, as well as for their significant investments in brand new state-of-the-art infrastructure, which is approved for certified organic operations. Pacific Coast Trading's Baja Onion Partnership is exclusive, which means Sumner enjoys a nearly guaranteed source of onions and can provide full oversight of harvesting, packing, and deliveries.
AgroPlante is the leading manufacturer in specialty products. AgroPlante formulates products that rise to the challenge of today's growing conditions. Saline and sodic soils reduce crop yield and cause significant crop losses. AgroPlante developed Cation EX5 Plus with growers in mind to manage soil salinity. With multiple years of research, Cation EX5 Plus has proven to be an excellent source of calcium and an effective soil salinity manager. Run it through drip irrigation without any issues. Simplify your application method with innovative and efficient formulations. Alleviate salinity stress with Cation EX5 Plus. AgroPlante. Imagination, innovation, science in action.
Last November, citrus growers and other industry members attended UC's Citrus Spray Field Day, and UCCE Assistant Specialist Peter Okolarbi, who ran the meeting, said it was a great success. The field day looked to promote citrus production efficiency and profitability through increased awareness of spray application best practices. Because of the complex nature of spray application under field conditions, growers and pesticide applicators have difficulty in recognizing or using best practices that result in desired application efficiencies. Therefore, applications often fall short. Developing and disseminating science-based recommendations from field trials and decision support tools to assist with pesticide spray application decisions will reduce the guesswork, improve efficiency, and promote effective pest control. The Citrus Spray Field Day was a four-hour classroom and field meeting, according to Akko Larbi, that discussed pesticide application effectiveness, focusing on axial air blast spray applications directed to citrus and other tree and vine canopies. It was instructed by Akko Larbi with support from his Agricultural Application Engineering Lab and the Kearney Ag Research Education Center personnel. Discussions covered techniques and considerations for optimizing spray deposition and coverage, as well as for minimizing pesticide drift. 16 participants were in attendance, consisting of growers, applicators and operators, pest control advisors and certified crop advisors, regulators and policymakers, scientists and researchers, and others. Importantly, 94% of the participants, according to Akko Larbi, reported learning something new.
The entire field day, we made it a very interactive presentation with participants fully engaged throughout the training based on observation. And we're glad to receive feedback from 15 out of the 16 participants. Overall, here are the percentages of those who reported gaining much to very much learning. We had 87% for the welcome, introduction, and purpose session. We had 80% for introduction to air blast spray advisor decision support tool, 87% for the air blast spray demonstration portion, and then 93% for the spray deposition discussion in Mandarin. And then likewise, similarly, we had 94% for spray deposition in Naval Orange, and then 87% in the spray drift potential for citrus application. On average, about 85% reported learning gains in the classroom portion compared to 91% learning gains in the field portion. But overall, 93% of the participants reported learning much to very much. Gaining much to very much learning for the entire field day, showing that the training was very effective and provided participants with a great amount of learning.
Although the field day was a success for UC and citrus industry participants, Akko Larbi said he will look to improve the event even more in the future in the hopes of getting a 100% learning feedback result.
We can provide a more hands-on experience to the participants because that helped them to learn. But this would not be applicable to all types of content, but we look forward to improving that aspect. We will also have to tailor the various meetings to different focused areas so that we can provide more trainings of different nature rather than just the field days. But for the field days, we need to improve the hands-on aspects. In terms of improving the hands-on aspect, I would also want to say that we realized that giving participants more hands-on experience will increase their learning, and we were excited to see an improvement in the learning from our air blast sprayer calibration training, which we conducted 2 weeks after the citrus spray field day. We are yet to publish or to provide a reporting on this, but we realize an increased learning compared to the citrus spray field day, and so we are happy to provide that additional information out there. And the calibration training also provided, as I in more hands-on experience. We had participants in full protective gear and directly engaging in the exercises. We would look forward to identifying the needs of different audiences and providing providing improvements in their learning based on what the feedbacks that we have obtained in the past. So yes, we are happy to continue doing this to help the agricultural community in general, and in this particular case, the citrus growers.
You're listening to My Ag Life. I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
This segment was sponsored by Polymer Ag, makers of Anti-Stress 550, the climate stress solution. Find out more at polymerag.com.
America's farmers, fuel marketers, retailers, and renewable fuel producers are calling on the Environmental Protection Agency to change its proposed standards for tailpipe emissions. The groups want the agency to adopt a market-oriented, technology-neutral approach to transportation decarbonization in its final tailpipe emissions standards for 2027 to 2032 light and medium-duty vehicles. In a letter to EPA Administrator Michael Reagan, the groups say the proposed rule favors electric vehicles while failing to consider the decarbonization potential of existing biofuels that can improve the emissions profile of a majority of cars on the road today. EPA should use the best available science to accurately account for the full life cycle carbon intensity associated with particular fuels and technologies, according to the groups. They also feel the proposed rule artificially tilts the scale towards electric vehicles without considering other options. The National Corn Growers Association, National Farmers Union, and Growth Energy were among the groups signing the letter. The Food and Drug Administration is taking comments through the month of July on voluntary guidances that would allow imitation and plant-based milk products to use the word milk as long as the company lists information about how the nutrition of that product compares to animal lactation-derived milk. Senior Vice President of Member Services and Strategic Initiatives with the National Milk Producers Federation, Chris Galen.
We like the latter part of that, which is that if you have to compare what is not in oat milk, as an example, versus what is in real milk, you'll see that real milk is the clear champion, you know, has the pole position with every single comparison, whether it's with soy or rice or oats or cashews, you know, whatever the one is this month. They tend to evolve over time as to what's the most popular one. But generally, in terms of protein, 10 other nutrients and vitamins, real milk is consistently the winner.
Galen says that National Milk does not agree that these products can call themselves milk, given the longstanding definition that the Food and Drug Administration has for milk. And he says his organization is trying to head off cheese, yogurt, and other products from using the word milk. At the same time, Board Cow has come onto the market, which is a lab-manufactured whey protein, and it is being coined as dairy-free milk.
Not only is it not milk, it certainly doesn't even qualify as a nutritional product because it doesn't have the same diverse number of nutrients that real milk has.
Chris Galen with the National Milk Producers Federation. Farmer sentiment rebounds on a more optimistic view of the future, according to the latest Purdue CME Group Ag Economy Barometer. James Minter with the Purdue Center for Commercial Agriculture gives a breakdown of the June results.
Thanks for joining us for the Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer May 2023 survey results. I'm Jim Minter, Director of the Purdue Center for Commercial Agriculture, and I'm going to share with you the highlights of this month's survey. The Ag Economy Barometer Index declined sharply this month. It was down 19 points compared to last month. That leaves the index 5 points higher than it was a year earlier, but it is 54 points below where it was 2 years ago. The index of current conditions and the index of future expectations were both down this month. Current conditions were down 13 points compared to a month earlier, but that leaves it still 20 points higher than it was a year ago. The future expectation index was down 22 points compared to last month. That's 3 points lower than it was a year ago. The Farm Financial Performance Index was also down this month. It was down 17 points compared to a month earlier when the reading was 93. The index is now 5 points below where it was a year ago and 50 points below where it was 2 years ago. The Farm Capital Investment Index was also down. It was down 6 points compared to last month, but that leaves that index up just 2 points compared to what it was a year ago. The index is now 28 points below where it was 2 years ago. When we followed up with producers who said now is a bad time to make large investments in their farming operation, two-thirds of them cited rising interest rates and the increased prices for farm machinery and new construction as the primary reasons why they think it's a bad time to make new investments. For the fourth month in a row, we asked producers what they expect to see happen with respect to prime interest rates here in the U.S. Compared to prior surveys, more producers say they expect no change in interest rates. But 59% of producers still think interest rates are going to rise over the next year. And in a related question, 40% of respondents expect this spring's bank failures to lead to some changes in farm loan terms in the upcoming year. Farmers' short-term outlook for farmland values declined this month. The short-term farmland value expectation index declined to a reading of 110 compared to 123 last month, and that's 25 points lower than it was a year ago. The longer-term index, however, actually rose a little bit. It was up 3 points compared to April. That leaves that index down 4 points compared to where it was 1 year ago. Looking more closely at farmers' short-term outlook for farmland values, the percentage of producers expecting farmland values to decline actually rose from 14% last month to 19% this month, and the percentage expecting values to actually increase declined from 37% to 29% this month. For the second month in a row, we asked producers what they think the likelihood is of Congress passing a new farm bill in 2023. This month, just 33% of the producers think it is at least somewhat likely that a farm bill will be passed by the end of the year. That's down from 40% that felt that way last month. When we asked producers what the most important title is in a new farm bill, 48% chose crop insurance, followed by commodity programs chosen by 25% of the producers in this month's survey. In a follow-up farm bill question, we asked corn and soybean producers whether they expect to see PLC reference prices for corn and soybeans to remain unchanged, increased, or actually reduced. 45% of the producers in this month's survey said that they expect to see PLC reference prices raised in the upcoming farm bill. That wraps up the highlights for this month's survey. The full report is available on the Purdue CME Group Ag Economy Barometer website, which is available at purdue.edu/agbarometer. And you can get even more details on the barometer with respect to our podcast, which is the Purdue Commercial Agcast, available at purdue.edu/commercialag. On behalf of the Center for Commercial Agriculture, I'm Jim Mintert. Thanks for joining us.
American Farmland Trust has opened applications for 2023's Brighter Future Fund program. It helps farmers nationwide improve farm viability, access, transfer, or permanently protect farmland or adoptive regenerative agricultural practices. The last day to submit applications is July 15th. The Brighter Future Fund provides grants of up to $10,000 per project. A project may involve one or more individual farmers or farm families, and projects will be awarded on a one-per-farm basis. Farmers and ranchers work hard to provide for their communities, their families, and their land, but they sometimes need help, according to an AFT news release. The Brighter Future Fund can provide that help. The Brighter Future Fund was launched in 2020 to help farmers launch, grow, and sustain farms despite forces impacting the food and agricultural system, including COVID-19, changing markets, and severe weather. Applications will be reviewed and awarded in order that they are received. Go to farmland.org for more information. The Agricultural Retailers Association is applauding Senator Tammy Baldwin's Reliable Rail Service Act. ARA appreciates Senators Baldwin, a Democrat from Wisconsin, and Roger Marshall, a Republican from Kansas, for leading legislative efforts to address the continuous rail service problems faced by the industry. That according to ARA President and CEO Darren Kopic. Those challenges have caused supply chain disruptions and negatively impacted other shippers within the agricultural industry. Retailers want Congress to tackle head-on the significant cost increases and service disruptions that harm the businesses of its ag retailer members and their farmer customers who rely on freight rail transportation to deliver the critical crop input products to feed and fuel the nation. Common carrier obligations still lack a clear definition. This proposal will provide some needed clarity to the common carrier obligation, improve the Surface Transportation Board's oversight authority, and help ensure railroads provide a reliable service at reasonable rates for shippers, which ultimately benefits consumers, according to Kopic.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on the every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.